Coming up on Tech News Today, can Moto X save Motorola? Will Tumblr sink Yahoo? Has Android defeated the iPad? All these questions and more will be answered next on Tech News Today.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, August 2nd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy iPhone and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day, the News Fuse. Motorola officially lifted the gag order on the press yesterday, revealing details about the new Moto X phone, the first phone entirely designed by the company since Google bought it. Features a 4.7-inch 720p AMOLED display, a 1.7 gigahertz Snapdragon S4 processor as part of the X8 processing system, an Adreno 320 GPU, 2 gigabytes of RAM. Maybe you're underwhelmed. Well, check this out. 24-hour battery life should help, as well as customization. 18 backplate colors, 7 colors for side buttons, all available in your requested combination. The X costs $199 for the 16-gigabyte, $249 for the 32-gigabyte on a 2-year contract. Only AT&T will offer the customization at first, though Sprint will also sell models and later offer the customization. The phone should come by the end of August in the U.S. and will work on all major carriers.
The European Commission has announced that it has approved conditions it agreed to with Penguin, the last major holdout in the antitrust probe involving Apple and publishers over ebook pricing. The book publisher agreed to terminate agency agreements that allow a publisher, not a retailer, to set prices on titles, as well as end the most favored nation pricing clauses that offer different prices based on location. Other book publishers, such as HarperCollins and Hachette, made essentially the same agreement back in December.
It's August 2nd, which means Michael Dell wants the shareholders to give him his company back. Dell and Silver Lake have raised their offer to purchase Dell Incorporated to $13.75 a share with a 13-cent per share special dividend. This offer would value the company at $24.9 billion U.S. There was supposed to be a shareholder vote today with Michael Dell's previous offer, but because of this new offer, the vote has been moved again to September 12th.
One day there will be a vote. We'll see it. Remember that SIM card security vulnerability that put 750 million phones at risk? Well, Carsten Knoll, the discoverer of the flaw, explained at Black Hat that the Java vulnerability has been fixed by 5 mobile carriers by using that same vulnerability to rewrite parts of their operating systems. Knoll was going to demo the flaw at Black Hat, but because of the fix, he was only able to demonstrate parts of it.
Jessica Lesson reports Apple has acquired wireless chip developer Passive Semiconductor. Passive develops low-power chips, including radios. A low-energy Bluetooth radio that they make has been considered promising for health and fitness devices that need long battery life. I imagine Apple thinks their devices could benefit from long battery life, too.
At the Black Hat Security Conference in Las Vegas, researchers Alex Stamos, Tom Ritter, Thomas Patchek, and Javed Samuel preached the gospel of newer algorithms and protocols because current ones will soon be useless and insecure by mathematical advances. So what's the next iteration that makes us secure again? It might be asymmetric encryption algorithms, which have pairs of keys. One key can decrypt data encrypted with the other key, but cannot decrypt data encrypted with itself.
Dial P for paranoia. The Wall Street Journal reports the FBI has the ability to remotely activate microphones on Android devices and notebook computers, according to an anonymous former U.S. official. These tools are supposed to help in cases of organized crime, counterterrorism, or child pornography prosecution. The tools it uses are both internally and externally sourced, with something coming from the private sector.
The Pebble smartwatch just got a little smarter. A new version of the Pebble iPhone app brings support for Gmail and other IMAP accounts. Now, previously, the Pebble app required users to use the Shutter default iOS mail app to get notifications on the watch. MobileBurn.com says that the text from some email providers may create some odd formatting, but you'll understand the gist of the message.
Suffolk County Police in New York visited the home of Michelle Catalan after her husband was reported by a former employer for searching for the terms backpack and pressure cooker bombs on company computers. Before she knew about the employer tip-off, Ms. Catalan posted on Medium wondering if the police visit had been caused by searches made on their home computers as she had been shopping for a new pressure cooker. The police did not find any cause for concern after a cursory search and interview and have dropped the matter.
Microsoft introduced two new troll-fighting tools for Xbox users today. Enforcement United crowdsources opinions on whether particular content, like gamer tags, violates Microsoft's terms of service. The other program, Xbox Community Level, rewards players with experience points and loot by contributing to the Ambassadors Program and Enforcement United and other future programs.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you in part by Squarespace.com. You know how much I like Squarespace. The all-in-one platform makes it easy to create a professional website or online portfolio. I use it for meritbooks.squarespace.com because I'm lazy. I want it to look good and be easy to use without having to put in all my time and effort and all the designing. I want the effort to go into the content. That's what Squarespace does. I'd like to check out some of the sites you guys have built. I know a lot of you use Squarespace. We've been getting these every day. Somebody tells us about a site that they use. I've got a music site guy Twittered at me yesterday. So send a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website and use the hashtag TNT Squarespace. We'll take a look and we might even talk about or mention some of these in a future episode. Some of the reasons you'll love Squarespace if you don't already have a site. In fact, if you want to get mentioned, you can go create a site really quickly. They're always improving their platform. They have those beautiful designs. It's inexpensive. Starts at just $8 a month. Includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And mobile ready. This is one of the things I love. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website. So your content looks great, whether you're on a 4-inch screen or a 10-inch screen or a 32-inch screen. It adapts to the right device. Even their code is beautiful. That code, they take pride in their back-end code, almost pretty much as much as they do their front-end design. They're beautiful on all ends. It's SEO optimized and hosting is included, but you don't have to take my word for it. Start a trial, no credit card required. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT8 and get 10% off to show your support for Tech News Today. Don't forget to send a tweet with that hashtag too, TNT Squarespace. We might be talking about your Squarespace site on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, very excited to have my old friend Brian Cooley, editor-at-large at CNET, back on the show. Good to have you back, man.
Hello, Doctor. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. We got lots of good stuff to talk about today. Let's jump right into it with the Moto X.
Also Len.
Oh, my gosh. It's Friday. I totally forgot. Len Peralta. You're so quiet back there drawing. It is Friday. I made Len cry. I apologize. Yes, it's Friday, and Len is back to illustrate our stories. Len, now that I've ruined your day, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm just fine. You know, it's easy to forget me. You know, just pretend I'm not here.
One thing we know about Len, he's resilient.
Wait, who was that? Yeah. If you want to find Len's previous
about us right now.
If you want to find Len's previous artwork, go to technewstoday.reddit.com. There's a link right up there at the top of that page where you can see the stuff that he's done. Or keep an eye on the video today to see him illustrate live as we go along. All right, let's talk about the Moto X now. 504 potential versions of this phone, ladies and gentlemen, given that 16, 32 gigabytes, the 18 cover colors, the 7 colors of the 3 different buttons. They say they're focusing on design, not features. That's what SVP product Rick Osterlo told The Verge. We don't think smartphones are very smart. Cooley, what do you think? Is this a good strategy for them to just say, you know what? I know it's not the best specs on a phone, but you're going to love it.
This kind of maps to the pending sort of saturation of the smartphone market. I mean, they are, in the research that I see, smartphones are becoming less differentiated in most consumers' minds. We're talking about the broad masses here, not people that are, you know, more tech savvy and tech discerning. So I think there is something about this. I mean, look what Apple did. They had huge success creating color versions of the iPods over the year. Color body, not screen. In theory, we've got the iPhone 5C coming, a color strategy. This is an old trick, but it works. I am surprised that they're going to be able to turn these around in apparently, what is it, 4 days for a custom order. But I guess they're building them here in the U.S., apparently in assembling them in Fort Worth, the customized little bits of filigree they put on there. You know what? I bet it's going to work for them. It's a fresh headline. It's a new gimmick. And for the broad mainstream of smartphone owners, this will be something that's cool.
Doesn't the price point seem like a sticking point? It's $199, and it's a mid-range phone when it comes to caliber of specs. Yeah. All these customizations aside, it looks like a really decent phone, and it looks like they're trying to stand out with color and have something unique. When you go into a store, you'll have this immediate pop in your eye. You're like, oh, this looks really interesting. But yeah. That price point really seems to confuse me, considering it's not a 1080p screen, and it's not... I mean, this is $199 on contract, not like unsubsidized. If it was $199 unsubsidized, that'd be amazing. But I'm just kind of curious about that price.
It should be a $99 phone. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I bet it goes there quickly, but they're going to milk all they can at launch at this price. And I bet they've got a plan to drop it to $99 really quick, really fast.
I mean, it would be more likely for it to be a $99 phone if it wasn't, you know, assembled in the U.S. and highly customizable, requiring a specialized workforce that's dedicated to turning around in 4 days. I think the price is actually pretty okay considering what they're
doing. You're blaming the unions. I see how you are.
Well, that's the consumer problem, but you're right.
Yeah.
Look at the Lumia, though. Microsoft came out, or Nokia came out with the Windows Phone Lumia that was $99, had different colored backplates, but it ran Windows Phone. It didn't have this touchless control system where at any time you just say, okay, Google now, and it can respond to your voice. It didn't have the gesture for photos. I don't know how much people care about that. And it didn't have this great battery life.
Yeah.
It was a bargain phone at $99. I think what Motorola is saying here is like, sure, it doesn't have the best processor in the world. Sure, it doesn't have like a 1080p screen, but we don't think that's important to most people when they pick up a phone. 720p is going to look great for a lot of people. Our GPU is still tops. Our new X8 system will extend the battery life and make the processing not an issue. And you get these cool new features. We think when you compare that side by side to the HTC One and the SGS 4, a lot of people will like these features that you can't get elsewhere. And those people are not us. They're the average user, not the power user.
I think that the headlines here that are going to stand out is this cool voice thing, cool slash spooky. It's always listening is the headline that they'll hear, they being customers. The customization totally works. And the fact that it's got great battery life, they've got a better than not mix of headlines here. I think this phone's going to do very well for them.
Yeah, the camera gesture actually got my attention because that seems to be the thing that can make or break any photo. Is when you try to get your phone out and you try to get to that camera app, unless it has a dedicated camera button to do it, that little, they call it the doorknob gesture, turning the doorknob, that brings the camera up in 2 seconds. To me, that was actually worthwhile because I'm always trying to take a picture of my kid and he's running around. And so before you lose it, that one picture, you get that option. I definitely like their... they didn't skin Android, but they added a couple of little features like that active display on the front where it has this little pulsing showing you the time, and you can hold the button down to see text messages and things without turning on your phone, fully anyway. So I thought
that's a skinning. That's not an Android feature, right?
Right. Well, I don't know if it's even skin. It's more like an app.
Yeah. Right now, it's not a vanilla Android feature. I wouldn't be surprised if you see that folded in at some point because that's a pretty awesome feature.
Really good feature.
Yeah.
Although these two companies, according to some rumors from The Verge, weren't talking to each other, especially when Andy Rubin was still in charge of Android. And that may be one of the reasons this is only 4.2.2, like any other carrier model, rather than being a stock Nexus 4.3, like it would be if you bought a Nexus model out of the Google Play Store.
Yeah.
And all this brings up I'm constantly befuddled by this, but how Android's fragmentation has apparently not hurt Android. I mean, no indication that it has, but I'm always surprised that you can see someone else's Android phone, again, talking mass market here, and say, oh, I see your Moto X. I'm going to go get me an Android phone, too. And they'll go get another Android phone that could be excellent but doesn't do these things we're talking about because it's not the right specific flavor slash skinning slash featured set of Android. I can't believe that hasn't hurt them more.
I read yesterday that Moto X, there's going to be a Google Play version of it, which is even more strange to me. Like a lesson, it already has very little skinning. Now it's going to be a full-on Google Play version of it. Like,
yeah, but you know, I mean, obviously the Play version is not going to have as much bloat because the carriers have obviously been successful at still negotiating with this device, something that people hoped wouldn't happen. The carriers end up with a version of this that has a bunch of, you know, carrier-specific apps and branding. You get the Verizon logo on the back, you know, little things like that, that like, the nerdy Android folks are going to be happy to go through the Play Store to get it just to get rid of that logo, that kind of thing.
I also am curious if this comes to other countries, if that is still assembled in the U.S., because I think one of the big issues here is that they're assembling it in the U.S. so that all that customization doesn't slow down the ship time all that much. And if you're going to sell it in Europe, you're going to have to assemble it in Europe if you want to do the same thing, or it's just going to have longer ship time. So keep an eye on that as well, if it even comes to those markets. Let's talk about Marissa Meyer. Now, this is a bold talk. She's saying she thinks she compete on search.
On search and in mobile.
What, really?
So there was a...
search. What?
There was a Marissa Meyer interview at Business Week, and Business Week had a bunch of things there. It says, Marissa Meyer says her strategy is to partner with other players, pushing Yahoo's licensed content, original shows, and apps to other companies' hardware, kind of like how Yahoo has the stock, quote, application on iPhone. She's hoping that she gets more deals that way. She goes, quote, "I hope that at some point we're looking at a world where mobile is a majority of our revenue," end quote. And the Business Week article mentions that when Meyer got to Yahoo, she found there was like something like a dozen mobile developers that were still there. And that actually explains part of why they went on this acquisition spree. And she's built a new mobile unit. And there was a lot of talk about them in that article as well. She said that the search game is far from over. She says it's physics in the 1600s or biology in the 1800s. There's miles to go before you get to quantum physics or even a microscope. There's a lot that you can do once you have mobile. And we're going to be very focused on the user experience. Cooley, do you think Yahoo can figure out mobile and become like a dominant player?
Well, the question is, what can they do with their Microsoft partnership? I mean, they don't run the guts of their own search. So right off the bat, that's the big discussion point everyone's having about this. How much then can you kind of add around the periphery of your Microsoft engine to differentiate and really do something core different? That seems like a reach. I mean, I'm no expert in search engineering, but that seems like that would be quite a challenge to say we're going to take a partner's powered search and we're going to completely innovate and revolutionize the way search works, even though we don't run the guts that make it work. I'm a little lost on that.
Yeah, I look at this and I read the part about mobile and I just nodded my head like, yes, those are the things she needs to say. Yahoo is doing better on their mobile apps. They're well positioned by being a default app on the iOS for stocks and for weather. If they can improve those as well, that might help. But when she got to the like, I think we can compete on search. Well, that's just crazy talk unless you consider that Marissa Meyer was involved very heavily in search at Google. That's almost taunting, saying, hey, you know some of those things I know? Yeah, Google, you're going to wish you had promoted me back then because I'm bringing them to Yahoo.
That's exactly what I was thinking is like, oh, think how much she knows about what they're working on, what they're stumped on, which even Google has to be stumped on a few ideas. And now she's got a whole fresh set of minds to throw the problem at and say, can we solve this? Because last time I was over there, they couldn't solve it. This could be our leg up. And that's really powerful stuff.
In the interview, Meyer was talking about why she left Google. She's saying she had a ton of ideas and how she just couldn't get them all done there. And so when the Yahoo opportunity showed up, that's why she moved over. So it looks like she has a ton of ideas that she hasn't gotten to implement. I don't even know if Google even knows what she was trying to do there, but it seems like it could be really interesting. I'm just kind of curious if Yahoo, they have bought a bunch of mobile apps, and I believe some emailers have written in saying, hey, are they building a mobile operating system at this point? Because it looks like with all the apps they have a news app, they have weather and stocks and everything else you can think of. Would that really make them go into the mobile game? Should they have their own version of Android or an operating system?
That's crazy talk. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but I don't see the writing on the wall for that. That strikes me as everyone saying Facebook's going to make an OS. Facebook had a mobile strategy and home ended up being it. And so far, it hasn't proved to be a very good one. I'm sure Yahoo has something up its sleeve that might be similar to home, like some sort of ecosystem play. I don't see Yahoo getting into making a mobile operating system. I could be totally wrong, but I think that's one of the least possible scenarios, in my own opinion.
Maybe a launcher. But it'd be interesting if they just built a version of Android, built on Google's open source version, and just do their own. Because they could. It's completely allowed. It just seems like it'd be a strange idea. But to get in the mobile game, I just... unless they have been getting into iOS more and more, right? They're the default apps. If they can just somehow leverage that, just... curious if they can do it. Yahoo seems like
when you look at BlackBerry, Windows Phone, Mozilla, Yola, all the people out there scrambling. That seems like the worst idea in the world to try to get that business for Yahoo. Right?
I like the worst idea in the world. You are absolutely right. I don't believe that's what she said in the article, though. So I like that.
Let's move on to Michelle Catalano of Long Island. Caused a stir on the internet yesterday. As we mentioned in the news fuse, posted originally on Medium that the police had come, and she thought it was because she had been searching for a new pressure cooker and her husband had been searching for a backpack and their son had been researching about the Boston bombings, and she thought maybe it tripped some NSA alarm somewhere. Declan McCullough of CNET took me to task on Twitter when I originally posted a link to the Atlantic story on this. I was like, correlation is not causality here. And it turns out he's absolutely right. Suffolk County criminal intelligence detectives visited the Catalanos after the husband's former employer, best we can tell, Wired says, it looked like from his Twitter he left that employer in May. That employer looked at his search history, saw pressure cooker bomb and backpack, and alerted the authorities. So they came to his house. Now, apparently they were very polite. They just did a cursory search. They didn't ransack the place. They didn't put pressure tactics on him. They just asked him, have you ever searched for a pressure cooker bomb? And he said, haven't you? Haven't you been interested? And two of them were like, well, yeah, you know, that's natural. And they said they didn't find anything worth acting on. Now, lots of folks overreacted to this story, especially before we found out about the employer tip-off. Lots of folks just want to let it go, saying there's nothing here. But in the end, it is interesting, I think, that a workplace surveilled a worker's searches and said something. And isn't that exactly what the government, by example and by request, is asking us to do? Cooley, what do you make of this situation?
And this is a former employer, is that right?
Yes, the former employer is the one who tipped off the police.
Yeah, I find that interesting, too. I find that more disturbing than if it was a current employer. I don't know where that, what is the term I would use, where that ratting out opportunity ends. I find that a former employer doing this is somehow meddlesome. And I also have a concern about how this is being taken up by the authorities purely on the complaint and not on any merits of it. We were all searching for backpack pressure cooker bombs in the days around the Marathon bombing, and we'll continue to. It's become a thing in the terrorism landscape. So it's a big launch for a small trigger.
Yeah, and Michelle Catalano has clarified both on her Medium post and on Tumblr that she now has learned that the Suffolk County Police received the tip-off from the employer. And she apologized. She's like, I just wrote my post based on the facts at hand. I wasn't trying to cause a stir. But I do think that this is the environment we've created, right? I mean, you're right, Brian. I don't like the idea of an employer looking into my searches and saying something. But all those posters that you see, all those commercials that you see say, if you're suspicious, say something. It's better to say something than not. And that's what happened. The employer said something. Didn't necessarily mean that they had it out for the guy. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. And the police took it seriously, but also seemed to act reasonably and said, look, 90% of the time this stuff turns out to be nothing, but we'd rather investigate it than not. So if we're upset about it, we should be upset about the environment that's been created around this.
Yes, because for this, for the Catalanos now, here we are talking about it, as are thousands of other people around the internet today. A police report has presumably been filed. A state has been created around their name. And one that probably won't go away in any formal or informal way. So when Mr. Catalano goes out to find his next job, if he's looking for it now, and they start to Google him, there's only one thing coming up. This has got a lot of baggage around it. And you're right. It's nothing to do with technology in the sense of the actual technical process here. It has to do with this state we have now of if you see it, say it, which is admirable on its face. But it's also got the dumb simplicity of just say no, which also was, you know, a very blunt instrument.
You don't like that kind of negativity. Just say no.
it's the bluntness of the tool that concerns.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's take a quick break and thank one of our other sponsors for today's show, Gazelle. If you want the new Moto X, if you maybe are like, no, I actually want an SGS4. I want an HTC One. I want an iPhone 5. You're going to need to come up with some scratch for that. You need a little cash. And one of the easy ways, hassle-free ways, simple ways to do it is to sell your old phone. And the simplest, most hassle-free way I know of is to go to Gazelle.com. Gazelle makes selling used gadgets fast and simple. Gazelle.com. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads, get a risk-free offer for your gadgets, lock in that quote for 30 days. Once you get a quote for them, it's good for 30 days. They won't lower it for 30 days. You can go and you can go about your business, get your new phone, transfer your data, change your mind, whatever you want to do. And then once you're ready to send that old phone off, you send it to them. They'll turn it around in a couple of days, get paid fast by PayPal, or get an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. Gazelle's even buying back a larger selection of tablets. In addition to the iPad, you can now sell Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, Asus tablets in most cases. So go to gazelle.com right now. Get an offer on your old phone, your old tablet. Find out what they're worth. Take a minute and lock in that quote for 30 days. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right. Sarah Lane did not magically disappear. She had a couch delivery happen right in the middle of the show. So I've been hoping to get her back as soon as possible. She'll be jumping in as soon as that's taken care of. But we got more stuff to talk about. In the meantime, is Tumblr shrinking? An interesting article on BuzzFeed today pointing out that CEO David Karp of Tumblr had said last November that Tumblr was in the top 10 sites in the U.S. and touting data from Quantcast. Yahoo bought Tumblr for $1 billion, partly based on those numbers, I'm sure. And now those Quantcast numbers are showing a decline in unique users from Tumblr. Tumblr says Quantcast doesn't provide a full picture of our data. It doesn't include our mobile app traffic, doesn't include time spent on the site, or all of the pages on the blog network because of Ajax page loading. So he's willing to tout the Quantcast numbers when they're good. He's not when they're bad, is what that comes down to. Overall growth is what matters. BuzzFeed notes Facebook grew its mobile user base by 51% since last year. And they have that same challenge that Tumblr has. So even if you assume that Tumblr is getting a boost that is not included in Quantcast, if overall growth slows or declines, but mobile users are more likely to see ads, is this bad news for Tumblr? And is that, by extension, bad news for Yahoo? Cooley, what do you think?
Well, one of the things that you mentioned was, you know, Facebook's results compared to what's going on here with Tumblr. And one of the things we were talking about when Facebook's, you know, pretty great numbers, both traffic and revenue, came out a few days ago was, yes, they seem to have cracked the code on mobile, at least in a large way, for themselves. But what they did to make mobile start to work for them doesn't necessarily translate to any other online publisher or site. It's pretty Facebook specific. So that was one thing that was like, you know, it was a big idea for Facebook. It didn't get the whole advertising community excited because they realized, yeah, this doesn't necessarily transmit across Pinterest, Tumblr, what have you. The other thing here is I don't know how it's identified in research, but I don't see Tumblr coming up very often, if ever I can recall, as a most used mobile resource. It might be that it's falling under generic categories. I'm not sure, but this is not one that you see touted a lot as people are really using a lot more of this on their mobile devices.
And when it comes to Tumblr, though, like, I don't know if there's any real competition. It's still a blogging system, and that's not something that, I mean, there's WordPress.com and there's Blogger and there's a bunch of these other things, but Tumblr had this like drop dead simple interface. You don't have to do any hosted installs. It seems like it's going to work as a larger piece for Yahoo, but I would imagine that I believe their peak numbers was back when Yahoo bought them, which, of course, that'd be a great time, and everything's declining. I wonder if part of it is that stigma that Yahoo just isn't cool. You're like, I'm on Tumblr and Yahoo bought them. I'm leaving. But I don't know if that's really going to have a long-term problem for Tumblr, because the way it works is just so simple. It's actually a very good service. I think that's the thing that's going to keep them going.
I think they've got a defensible thing here by saying that the Quantcast numbers don't tell the whole picture, right? Because I when I was using a Tumblr, I used it when I moved to sort of document my move. I was always on the app. That's where it was easiest to post because you take a picture and then you write up a little quick thing and you post it and that's it. So they might be losing a large majority. But even if they're not, I wonder if this matters to Yahoo. Marissa Meyer has said in several interviews, we're acquiring talent. And I believe that was true of Tumblr. Not that they don't want to keep Tumblr going or they don't want Tumblr to succeed, but that's not what that acquisition was predicated on. I think that acquisition was predicated on getting those engineers in-house because they haven't touched Tumblr. They haven't changed it.
Yeah, if they see good engineering going on there, right there is the buy right off the bat. And the other thing is, this is part of a constant trend we've seen repeatedly since the dawn of the interactive media age, since the mid-early 90s, that you start off with a lot of people publishing, and then a lot of them drop away over a period of the first few years of any given platform, whether it was our own personal home pages back in the day, whether it's audio podcasting which a lot of people did, and I think a lot fewer do now. There's always this rise initially of sort of hobby appeal and even fetishists, and then eventually it drops down to where the 10% published for the 90%, and maybe Tumblr is just on the downside of that natural slope.
Sarah Lane is back. Her couch has been delivered, I hope. Is that all taken care of?
Oh, man. Well, it's in quite a few pieces over in the next room, but yes, I no longer have to wait for anybody to deliver my couch. Sorry, I was MIA for the first part of the show, and please stop me if anyone said anything in this Tumblr story that I might have missed. But I think what's interesting is, yeah, Quantcast is not necessarily the end-all be-all of what growth is or is not. It's, you know, it's one metric, and they don't all match up with competing metrics companies. But Tumblr is interesting because Tumblr has just very, very recently started to get into the advertising game. The advertising part of Tumblr happens in the dashboard experience. Well, a lot of people, if I have my personal blog that I use Tumblr's engine for, but sarahlane.com points to my blog, someone might not ever really go to the Tumblr experience. They might never know that I'm part of the Tumblr experience. On the dashboard, there's more of me being marketed to. People who are accessing Tumblr via mobile will use the dashboard experience more often. It's just sort of the nature of mobile. So I'm interested in, it's interesting to me that Yahoo may say, yeah, I mean, if numbers decline but mobile numbers go up, we still win because that's where some of our revenue is going to come from down the road.
Yeah, which is an interesting thing to say when mobile revenue is generally thought not to have as good of a opportunity to make money at this point, which I think is silly too. I think people will figure out how to make more money off mobile. And the other thing to consider here is the fact that people are moving off of blogs and social networks to things like WeChat and Snapchat. And we talk about it all the time, especially in the Asian market. So this is also contributing to a possible dampening effect on Tumblr. I think there's just a lot of things going on with those numbers. All right, let's talk about YouTube planning to open another production studio for their users.
Yeah, it's going to be in New York. It's going to be opened up in October 2014. This announcement is made by YouTube at VidCon. And when it's completed, it's going to be YouTube's fourth space for making professional videos. It's already got one in London. Tom might know about the one in Los Angeles. And there's one in Tokyo. If you're not aware, these spaces allow video makers to get access to cameras, lights, mics, post-production suites, all for free, no charge there. Cooley, what do you think this tells us about YouTube's content plan? It seemed like for a while they were trying to court a bunch of professional, bunch of content partners, you know, old media, but they keep building out these studios. So it seems like they're trying to do lots of things at once.
This ties into the ongoing, I think, definition is evolving of this term. It's not all that commonly being used yet, but it's, PPOV, professionally produced online video. So high quality stuff that was never intended for TV is kind of the general definition there. May come from one of the big players, like the big studios or networks, but I think there's actually a more vibrant tier that is one notch below, which is what you might call the user auteur, who is interested in creating on a regular basis really high-quality content, but may not ever be part of a major studio operation because that model doesn't need to be there anymore because that was so tied to distribution that was so unique. So this, to me, is, I think, helping to define whatever this new sort of tier 1.5 is in the world of video production. If you're just a one substantial but not critical step below the big guys, this is the kind of forge that content will be created at. I think it's useful because you do hit some limits pretty quickly on your volume and your time capacity and dollar capacity to DIY this stuff. We have tons of great tools. People are creating some great video now using all of their own resources. But there is something very freeing and very friction-reducing about having a studio infrastructure you can get into.
Yeah, I know more about this than most because my wife works at the YouTube creator space, YouTube Space LA here. That's why I had to move to Los Angeles. I do know a few things that I can't talk about because of that, particularly Ooh. About that space. Not anything interesting, frankly. Ooh. Just, you know, like...
Ooh, not interesting stuff. Ooh.
I mean, this doesn't it seem just sort of like basic geographical makes sense here? I mean, mm-hmm. if you've got LA as the big place in the US, well, that's really far away from a lot of really great content creators. So if you've got an office in, you know, Tokyo, London, New York just makes a lot more sense to have something, a big presence on the East Coast. It is New York City. And it would seem like YouTube would just have access to a huge segment of potential YouTube stars or current YouTube stars that they can do more live events with in a headquarters there.
Yeah, New York's basically, you can't walk around like anywhere near the NYU campus without seeing like Law and Order being shot, because there's like 500 of those episodes or 500 shows of that. Too. So there's lots of, and there's the NYU, I went to NYU for a little bit. NYU has all of these great filmmakers, so I could see this being a really great home for that. The fact that you don't have to come out all the way to LA if you want to use one of these YouTube creator spaces. I think in New York, that's going to be a really interesting amount of content they're going to get there, because I'm pretty sure lots of people are definitely going to try to take advantage of a free to access all these professional tools. It's going to have I bet another content boom once this thing opens in October.
On the other hand, I was just thinking here, look at the history of community cable access television. I don't recall anything good ever coming out of that. Maybe I've missed something, but cable access television is just a little bunch of eating a lot of crap.
What I could say is that you have to have a minimum number of subscribers. I think it's 10,000 to be able to apply to use these spaces.
Okay.
And they have different levels of access. Some are like training classes, where they're like, bring you in and let's say, well, let's teach you how to use the equipment. And then they also require collaboration. So a lot of people, you know, when they come to this Space LA, may get the chance to work with, you know, Shira Lazar or Freddie Wong or, you know, any of these bigger YouTube names that are using the space, because they really encourage them to help each other out. And so that's the kind of thing that differentiates it from community access television, I think.
The chat room is pointing out Tom Green came out of public access. So there you go.
True.
Well, there's that, I guess.
And I think he went back to it.
Yeah, I think so. All right, let's finish our discussion segment with a CNET story about the shift from iPads to Android tablets.
Yep, iPads are on the outs, everybody. It's curtains for us. No, I'm just kidding. But it's some interesting numbers. New research from Canalys, who does reports on tablets and shipment growth and that sort of thing. Apple still has 43% of worldwide tablet market. So again, vast majority. Although Samsung is now at 22% with 7.4 million units shipped in the quarter, and some very, very big gains from other competitors to Apple. For example, 295% growth during the second quarter compared to last year for Samsung, but 228% for Acer, 317% for Lenovo, and overall Android shipments topped Apple. Now, again, that's not one single competitor, but collectively, Android's in the lead. 68% of tablets shipped in the second quarter had a screen size smaller than 9 inches, which of course shows that people really do like that smaller form factor. And then when you look at Apple's tablet shipments, even though it's in first place, those shipments are down. They're down 14% year over year. Now, you might say, well, what does this all mean? Is it just regular market stuff? Canalys analyst James Wang said in a statement, when Apple does decide to refresh its iPad, it will not experience the buzz of previous launches. And I think that's really interesting, because we had a story yesterday, the Wall Street Journal's reporting that we might be able to expect a Retina iPad mini after all here in 2013, which was seemed iffy beforehand. But if it's the case that, well, we've seen it all, we're just hoping that Apple will keep up with everyone else, there's really nothing to put Apple ahead, because tablets have already arrived. They might have sort of invented this market that now works really well, but they're not going to continue to surprise and delight because they just have too many competitors. So I guess my question for everybody is, if tablets are kind of no longer the new thing, is this just another PC cycle where we've got a couple OSs? Right now it's iOS and Android, maybe some fringe products. Or is Apple actually in trouble here?
Well, the tablets all do the same thing, and the market's starting to understand that. To people that are very much into this kind of stuff, they see the differences loudly. But to the mainstream market, it's a connected screen. They all run them pretty much the same important apps, even though they have, 200,000 different in units of actual apps available. And I think there's a real problem with the pricing of the iPad mini. And the 7-inch tablets outgrew the overall tablet market 2-1 last year. They were just absolutely the rock star of what tablet growth was all about in 2012. People got turned on to the $200 7-inch product and weren't too particular about where it came from. And Apple's got to recognize that. The mini is too pricey, and it's actually too big. It doesn't fit in a jeans pocket. It doesn't fit into an inside jacket pocket. These are real-world issues.
I suspect price is probably the biggest driver here overall. And I look at this and I could swap in smartphone, and we've been having this exact same conversation as Android's market share began to rise in smartphone. And it's always the debate of like, yeah, well, but Apple only makes the iPad and Android's made by Samsung and Asus and all these different. It's exactly the same dynamic going on as the market matures. Apple's market share was bound to go down, and Android's market share, because it's diversified, is bound to go up. What will be interesting to see is if, say, a Nexus 7, Nexus 10 ends up becoming the Galaxy S4 of this scenario. But the other thing going on that I don't think was going on in the iPhone, early iPhone days, is when's the last time Apple came out with an iPad that anyone lined up and wanted to get at the store? They haven't had an exciting tablet product. I guess the Mini was the last exciting tablet product, but when was that? It seems like that was forever ago. So, and this is a general problem with Apple right now, is they haven't really made a splash with anyone in a while. And so I don't think anyone's anticipating a new iPad or buying a new iPad because of that.
I think Tom's definitely right about the pricing. But the thing about Apple is that they're, even their laptop, same thing. It's kind of like a premium brand when it comes to Apple. I don't think they're going to try to even ever really compete with pricing of like trying to get a $199 or like a $99 tablet. That's just not Apple. It just seems like they are going to keep building those premium style devices, because if you get a $100 Android tablet, they're pretty chintzy. It's like plasticky and it doesn't feel really great. And Apple always has that premium feel when it comes to that. And the other thing is Android as a tablet operating system is like finally matured to a point where it's usable. The original version of it, like Honeycomb, that was this kludged together thing that the first generation of Android tablets just didn't work. They were overpriced, and the applications weren't there. The 7-inch form factor, though, can take even like phone applications, make them larger, and they still look good. It's when you go to that 10-inch form factor that it seems to fall apart for Android tablets.
All right, let's finish up with the randomizer. Randomizer. Ran another straw poll with our live audience today. The choices were Forbrewery, an ingenious wall calendar you'll never have to replace. I guess that's not even a tech story. North Korea has a tablet. There's no Wi-Fi, but it does come with Angry Birds. And the Queen's never-read speech that prepared her subjects for World War III was released out of confidentiality in the UK. That Queen's speech barely made it out. It was part of a kind of a war games scenario back in 1983. And as part of the pretending of what was going on in this exercise, they wrote a speech as if World War III had begun and had what the Queen would have said. And often that's the case, actually, that government ministers will write the speech for the Queen and she may revise it. But, this madness of war is once more spreading through the world, and our brave country must again prepare itself to survive against great odds, calling out Winston Churchill. It definitely reads like a real speech. Kind of reminds me of an art role-playing game, like a really good role-playing game.
I like this idea. Maybe I should come up with all kinds of in case of like email responses,
for yourself.
Yeah, just have a whole bunch of at the ready, in case something horrible happens or somebody's car gets stolen. I'll just have it ready. It's been a horrible time for you, and I apologize that this has happened to you. And God bless you all for your cars being stolen. Whatever. Because this.
I'm sorry about your couch.
That was this dog. Hey, Sarah Lane.
Multi-paragraph canned replies. This will be the next thing in auto response. Especially in automotive systems. That'd be ideal. I'd like to have like multi-paragraph canned responses in my dashboard system so I can, instead of coming back with a, I'm driving right now, I'll be there soon, I want to send them a World War III letter. That's going to really get someone. They'll say, where is
Ken in our chat room, Ken from Chicago, says someone needs to get Helen Mirren or Meryl Streep to read this.
Well, BBC said they have an actress reading it aloud on their site, so I haven't heard that yet. Okay. So I don't know which one they got.
Absolutely. Let's thank our last sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. More than ever, you hear about it in every show. Every episode of Tech News Today, we're talking about some kind of surveillance, some kind of spying going on. If you want to do the most to protect yourself, whether it's from a government, whether you just don't trust your own ISP, or whether you're out in a coffee shop or an airport or a hotel and you're using a Wi-Fi access point, that's when you really need to be careful. VPN is a great way to protect yourself. ProXPN is a great VPN. 512-bit encryption tunnel works by OpenVPN or PPTP, bypass internet filtering and blocked websites, bypass geographical restrictions for internet content and online video. They have servers all over the world. I use it a lot, especially when I'm traveling. And if one server seems to be slow, I just switch to another server. Never have a problem. Rarely have to even switch between the servers. It works for Windows or Mac. Also works with iOS or Android devices. World-class customer support, and even Steve Gibson from our own Security Now gave it a great review. So go to proxpn.com/twit and make yourself feel a little safer. Actually, make yourself be a little safer. You can get more information, sign up. ProXPN premium accounts, normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year, but we've got a special offer. Use the code TNT and receive 20% off the lifetime of your account. It's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. Go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code, sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. What's on the calendar, Sarah?
Well, coming up this Sunday, August 4th, YouTube is kicking off its first Geek Week to spotlight nerdy content. Yay! Also, looking ahead to the end of September, on September 30th, free iCloud storage for Mobile Me users ceases to exist. That actually includes people like me. Darn it. I wanted it to be free forever.
Get ready to reach in your pocketbooks. Anybody have pocketbooks anymore? I don't know.
Let's check the couch cushions.
Incoming message.
Money. And we got a message from Rich in lovely Cleveland. Tom and Posse, in terms of 3D printing being cheaper than going to the store and buying online, one factor seems to be left out. I'm just starting to explore 3D printing. The Cleveland Public Library has two models for public use, and it seems the biggest problem is that the consumer still has to do all the prototyping for these items. Look at the products on Thingiverse. Many have detailed customization instructions for different printers. I feel that accounting for a 20% failure rate is rather conservative, especially for someone who isn't going to tweak the 3D models they get off of Thingiverse. Of course, over time, this becomes less of an issue. Once you get the model and settings dialed in for your particular printer, the printing process will go much smoother for a set number of items. Still, while the study accounts for the value of a person's time, it doesn't factor in the initial patience that it might require. P.S. My first item I'm printing is a tiny Velociraptor skull.
Nice. Now, Rich in lovely Cleveland, is that the same Cleveland you're in, Len?
That is the very same Cleveland.
Okay, you're in the lovely Cleveland. Good.
I am the lovely Cleveland.
Rich in lovely Cleveland is one of our best emailers. He's always got something interesting to say. He's always insightful. He's very reasonable. So I don't want to pick on him too fast, but I feel like these guys bent over backwards to try to anticipate everything that people might criticize about this study. I don't know how they would have factored in patience. I get what he's saying, which is like, hey, it ain't as easy as it looks. It takes a little bit of patience to get this stuff up and running. And that's definitely a fair point. I don't know how you factor that in as a cost in the study.
Doesn't Hipmunk do that with like their agony when it comes to traveling?
Maybe they
could have had an agony meter.
They should reach out to Hipmunk.
There you go.
There's a certain amount of agony involved, just so you know. All right. But thank you for emailing, Rich. Great to have you. Speaking of Len Peralta, it is time now at the end of the show to review what Len has been drawing. If you haven't been watching on the video, go get the video now. Take us through what you got, Len.
Sure. It was interesting because the stories kept switching around, but luckily I am fast on my feet and took care of them ready to go. This first one here, Moto X, is this going to save Motorola? I drew Moto X as a superhero, kind of
He's
a Superman. Moto X away, yeah.
I thought that
was kind of a fun little
That's
one.
That's great.
Marissa Meyer. A superhero. Once again, keeping a superhero theme here. I think she's going to...
Why does she have a katana?
Because she's a search ninja.
Yeah, she is. She's going to take everybody on and cut some heads. I don't know. I just thought... I saw the picture of her, and I thought it would be cool to draw her as kind of like a bride from Kill Bill. So there you go. the search for pressure cooker and backpacks, which now I'm going to be checked out for. This is a bomber. You know, it's interesting. The show is called TNT, or shortened down to TNT. So now I'm a terrorist for searching Tom Merritt conspiracy and TNT. You're the crazy one. Tumblr going down here in size. Tumblr growing. Tumblr at age 6 here. I don't know what's going on, man. He's getting smaller.
Reverse growth chart. Yeah.
Reverse growth chart, exactly. YouTube Studios in New York. It would be pretty cool to have a studio on the East Coast. This is obviously not true, but here's a million-dollar lighting rig. Guy has an iPhone 3, and he's saying, check me out of my new pro studio in New York.
He's backlit, too.
Actually, not as false as you might.
Yeah.
He is backlit. Boy, that's something not really, really good for
all
for
that New money. Look at the lighting room.
wouldn't you rather use our Inkigami cameras? No, I got my iPhone. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
People are not excited so much about iPads anymore. Here's a guy who's wearing a fez, all excited about the touch screen. Little guy says, meh, not really buying it.
So maybe Morocco is very excited about the iPad.
Exactly.
Or the doctor, yeah.
Or the Shriners.
Exactly.
So many fezes, so little time. Well, thank you, Len Peralta, as always. Is it bit.ly/Len?
Twitlen.
Twitlen.
Yes.
bit.ly/Twitlen. We'll take you directly to his page. Or if you're on our subreddit, it's linked at the top of that as well. Good stuff, as always, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Go to bit.ly/Twitlen if you'd like to purchase. Which one do you think you'll put up? Do you know yet?
I'm not sure yet. You know what? I'm not really sure.
I was a big fan of the Moto X one. I thought that was pretty great.
Moto X one might be kind of a cool one. I might try to do some color on this one. It might be kind of fun.
I like the Marissa Mark.
The Search Ninja is awesome, I think.
You always do a great job, but today it's really hard to pick.
Yeah, they're good ones.
The Marissa Meyer one. That is pretty cool. I'm pretty happy with that.
Brian Cooley, if you could have one printed out and sent to you, which one would you choose?
I love reverse growth chart.
Oh, yeah.
That's just a great concept.
That's good stuff. Well, thank you, Len. Thank you for being with us. And thank you, Brian Cooley, for being back on the show. Always great to have you, man. And let folks know where they can find your work at the CNET these days.
CNEToncars.com. CNEToncars.com. It's our new more in-depth car tech show. It's been going a year next week. So we have
You get an actual domain name for it?
Yeah, I know, right?
What? We can never get, high tech, man.
We can never get those back in the day.
No.
That's sweet.
Yeah,
good stuff. CNEToncars.com. I will check it out. Thank you, my friend. And as I mentioned, our subreddit is technewstoday.reddit.com. Not only can you find a link to Len's work at the top, but you can also submit stories for our consideration. You can vote on the stories that others have submitted. Vote it up, vote it down. Let us know what stuff you're interested in. It really does help us figure out what stories we're going to cover each and every day. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Leave us a voicemail if it's briefly, 30 seconds or so and has a good point, Iaz might pick it to play on the show. So give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back on Monday with Chris Ziegler. See you then.